Welcome to the Clear Admit MBA Admissions Podcast. I'm Graham Richmond, and this is your wiretaps for Monday, February 15th, 2021. I'm joined by Alex Brown from Cornwall, England. Alex, how are things this week?
Very good, thank you, Graham. Although we're having a blast of cold, windy weather.
Yeah, it's been cold in Paris. We had, like, it snowed a couple times last week, which it almost never does here. And it didn't accumulate much, but still, it's been, bitter cold. So just when we thought warmer days were around the corner, we've been reminded that February has a ways to go yet. So
yeah, there you have it. I've stopped drinking my beer on the beach this week. It's too chilly.
So what happened last week? I mean, it feels to me like we're kind of through peak interview invite season, but take us through what's been going on and what might be coming up here.
Yeah, what happened last week is later on this afternoon, hopefully Wharton will release its interview decisions, because yes. Obviously we're recording this on Thursday, so yes. That's the schedule.
Yes.
And that's, you know, one of the last of the big schools that releases decisions all at one time. Of the interview invites. If you don't get the invite, then you're not getting moved forward sort of idea. So hopefully we'll have seen that last week, as well as obviously London Business School released some decision, interview invite decisions, INSEAD and so forth. We're seeing lots of schools that sort of trickle or roll out those interview invites. They continue to do that and will continue to do that. Sort of Haas is one of those schools, Stanford, and so on and so forth. The last big school we're waiting for that sort of the idea of sort of releasing all interview invite decisions in one blast is going to be the Sloan School, MIT. And I've not seen yet that they've announced exactly when that's going to happen. I have seen that there's been email from Sloan School saying that they will know by the end of February whether they have an interview invite or if they're not going to get admissions. That gives them a little, you know, a couple more weeks leeway in terms of when they release those interview invites. So we know that the Sloan School, their round two deadline was later than other schools. They're typically 1 or 2 weeks behind other schools in this regard. So yeah, maybe it's this week, maybe it's the following week. We'll get big news out of MIT.
That sounds good. Yeah. And I will say, if you're using the Clear Admit interview archive to get sample questions and help prepare, just remember like how useful it is when it comes time for you to have a chance to post. Because that archive exists solely because of our community and the, you know, students from year to year. So it'd be great if you remember how useful it is to share your interview reports once you've interviewed at a school. I know everyone's right now just focused on getting ready for those interviews, but just remember to pay it forward down the road. Alex, speaking of that, our community has gone a little crazy, right? Because we introduce these awards for people as they get their different likes on their account for comments they're leaving and stuff. And, 30 likes gets you a free guide, 60 gets you a couple of publications that you can give to friends, and 90 gets you a $90 Amazon gift card. And so what have you noticed with that? It seems like people are active on the site and people are giving some great advice, which allows you and I to like step back a little bit almost.
Yeah, I love that 90 for 90 idea. I don't know who came up with that number, but it's absolutely brilliant. but yeah, no, it's actually, you know, obviously a couple of weeks ago, we decided that we were going to try to create these awards for these different levels of contribution, not knowing exactly what the impact of these awards might be. And I've been very pleasantly surprised with the level of activity, the comments, and some of the folks. And it's not just that they comment quickly to try to stimulate a couple of likes, but some really thoughtful contributions. And the reality, Graham, is these are from folks that have traveled through this admissions process. So they've developed a deep insights into various schools and processes and so on and so forth, and they can share that.
Yeah.
Whilst I think we have really good insight in terms of directly into the admissions process, we're very seasoned, we've done it a lot at schools, and now we can advise on it. But, you know, we haven't navigated the process this season like these folks have. So really good, thoughtful insights. I've been extremely pleasantly surprised. I hope it continues. And frankly, I learn a lot reading these contributions.
Yeah, same here. It's been really fun to see. Speaking of contributions, we got an email. So people have been paying attention and sending, you know, we asked you to send emails to info@clearadmit.com with the subject wiretap. So we got an email from a first-time emailer, long-time listener, as you might say. And, you know, Alex, just as an aside, this means that people listen, right? Even if my mom is not listening, because I did, remember I wished her happy birthday, and then I checked with her to see, hey, did you hear? And she just gave me this kind of blank response, which was kind of like, no, I didn't listen to the podcast. So my mom did not even hear her birthday greeting. And, you know, sometimes, Alex, I wonder if the rest of the team at ClearAdmit listens to this or not. But
well,
anyway.
If your mom knows what a podcast is, she's well ahead of my mom.
Yeah. She told me she's listening to other stuff, not ours, you know.
Nice.
No. But anyway, so we did get a question. And it's actually a really good question. I'll just read it to you. And I wanted to get your take on it. And this person says, I'm an avid listener of the podcast. And the website helped me tremendously over the past few months. I was featured in one of your episodes as well, and I was wondering whether you could dedicate a short segment to an issue that may bother some applicants who are invited to interviews at top schools. And the question is, what do you do if you have a below average GMAT or GRE score and you've made the interview cut at a school? Should you, you know, think about like taking the test again to boost your odds of getting it, making the final cut of a school's admissions, you know, process, even if you've maybe already taken it a couple of times and you know, not hit the mark you wanted? Or should you not worry about the test because you've made the interview cut and just focus solely on interviews and maybe outreach to current students? You're really getting yourself ready and immersed in the community to excel in that interview. And yeah, I just was curious, Alex, what do you make of that? Like, what should someone do? Let's say you've got an interview invite at Harvard and your GMAT score is a 700 or something, or a 690. Should you use the time that you have before final decisions come to like boost that score, or should you do, you know, just get ready for the interview?
Yeah, I mean, quite honestly, this is a terrific question, and it illustrates a few really important points, I think. The first point being, admissions is truly holistic. We try to preach that. I mean, obviously, numbers are important, and there is going to be some correlation between high numbers and high work experience and high other stuff, right? So you hope that stuff is generally going to be reasonably correlated. I'm doing a bit of studying on statistics, Graham, so I'm learning these terms.
Okay.
But you get the idea, right? So typically someone with a 750 GMAT's probably also got great work experience and also volunteers and so on and so forth. But the point is, it's a holistic review process. And as an outcome of that, there will be some folks that get invited to interview that have below average data points because perhaps other aspects of the candidacy are above average and so on and so forth, right? So hopefully that makes sense. The other really important point I think is to address is not everybody invited to interview is the same. So some people have this perspective that, oh, I've overcome the hurdle and I've got an interview invite. So we all start from the same point now. The best interviewers get in. That's not going to be the case. In most cases, if not in all cases, once the interview is complete, a further review of the candidacy will be undertaken, looking at the interview report and what was learnt in the interview, and mapping it to everything else that they know about your candidacy. And only at that point then will that final decision be made. Therefore, that lower test score is still going to be a factor in that final decision. So hopefully that's clear. I don't know that there's a school that takes any other approach than that type of approach. Right, Graham?
Yeah, that's actually an excellent point, which is that, yeah, you're, you know, just because you get an interview invitation and sort of have overcome that initial hurdle that may have been in place because of the low test score, it doesn't mean, yeah, that the test score might still, you know, be a bit of a hurdle. I think, you know, the thing that I feel about this subject is that it really depends on the approach the school's taking as well. Like I sort of feel like there are some schools who make a very deep cut when it comes to interviewing. And so they're basically selecting the people to interview that, you know, assuming the interview goes well, they feel like could be a really great member of their community. And I'm thinking of like Harvard or, you know, to an extent, MIT, some of the schools, Stanford, that do pretty deep cuts before they get into the interview phase. There are other schools, whether it's Columbia or Booth or Wharton or many others, that they interview actually a pretty sizable chunk of the applicant pool. So for them, you know, they can very easily overlook a test score or something, just get the person in, see how it goes, and then make the decision, as you said, very holistically on the back end, where that test score could still be, you know, a factor. But when push comes to shove, I'm not really convinced that anyone from interview invitation to final decision can really prep for and take the test and boost their score. I mean, that's a lot to ask while also prepping for the interview itself. So, if the question here is like, should you go back and retake the test in the 3 weeks you have, you know, or a month you have between, you know, interview and final decision, I don't really lean that way. I think that would be really challenging unless you'd been prepping all along and are just ready to like go sit it in a week or something. I don't know what you think about that, Alex, but like, should someone retake the test in this little window?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's a fair point, Graham. I will, again, reaffirm what I said, though. That test score will still count at some level.
Yeah.
So don't think that you've overcome the hurdle and it really has a negligible impact. So if you can't retake the test, as Graham points out, that it would be very challenging given everything else you're trying to juggle and so on and so forth. You might need to absolutely mitigate the test score. So just imagine your interviewer knows that test score, mm-hmm. and asks you bluntly, you have a 670 on the GMAT, you're 50 points below our average. Can you assure me that you will handle the rigor of our academic program, as well as engage in all the other offerings that we have on campus, you know, careers and clubs and so on and so forth? Because that's basically what they're looking at, right? With your test score, with your GPA, we want to make sure, not that you can handle the curriculum, but you can thrive in that curriculum.
Right.
So just be prepared to answer that question. And you say, well, actually, I've got a 3.9 engineering GPA from whatever, and I'm a very poor standardized test taker, and I've taken the test 3 or 4 times, et cetera, et cetera. But surely that 3.9 engineering GPA over 4 years out of a great engineering school is a clear indication I can handle your curriculum. I mean, obviously you wouldn't say it in that,
that tone,
forcefully or whatever. But I mean, that's the case you've always got to make, that you will thrive
right.
in their curriculum.
Yeah, and I think, you know, I promised the listener who sent in the question that I'd have a very eloquent response ready, and I don't feel like I really nailed it. But I guess my point was really just that I think it comes down to the person. Like, I'd need to know, you know, how many times have they taken the test? Did they get a 3.9 undergraduate GPA from a top school in a challenging subject? And what school are we talking about? You know, because that might matter too on the fringes right here. So, but in the end, I would say if gun to the head, have to pick, I would rather someone spend time getting ready for the interview process than like rush to take a test that may or may not go well, knowing that they have been invited to interview with the test score they had. So I want to make sure, you know, it is important for people to prep for these interviews and be ready. But as you correctly point out, Alex, the test score doesn't go away after the interview. It's still part of your file, which is really important to remember. So
yeah.
Anyway, great to get that question. Keep them coming, folks. And before we dive into the candidates we're going to discuss this week, I just wanted to mention that we did a bunch of things on the website. We've got an MIT Sloan Real Humans that came out. We also did the Carlson School at UMinnesota for Real Humans. And there've been some other interesting things. You know, there was a gift given to Kellogg to support women in business. Oxford announced funding for a new global leadership center. And the Kellogg marketing professors and students picked the best ads from the Super Bowl, which I always love seeing how they rate the ads and which ads performed well. I think that the ads this year were probably more exciting than the game itself, which was a bit of a blowout. And the other thing, Alex, was that we had the Financial Times rankings come out last week. Do you want to just comment on those? The top of the, I guess the top school was, I believe it was INSEAD this year. LBS was in second place. But what do you make of those rankings in light of the pandemic and some schools not taking part?
Well, I mean, obviously, it's been a very difficult year for rankings, with several schools not taking part in this FT ranking, not taking part in the Economist ranking. And then I think the other rankings just didn't exist this season. So, I mean, quite frankly, I would take a lot of these rankings this season with a pinch of salt. The FT, what has it done well? Well, I think it's ranked the European schools very well, to some extent anyway. As a learning manager at London Business School, Graham, which is one of my other side gigs, I'm very proud that LBS is number two.
Yes.
Although clearly I think it should be number one, but you know, that's a personal bias.
Right.
But you know, one thing the Financial Times tries to do better than any other organisation is sort of rank the European schools or the schools outside of the US with the US schools. I think that's very challenging because, quite frankly, it's almost apples and oranges when you're trying to rank them together.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because, you know, if you want a different type of career, different geography, this, that, and the other, your decision making is going to be very different across these schools. But that said, I think they do well in Europe. In the US, you know, I would question some of the order of their rankings. I do think the US news does the US far better than anyone else. But again, they're not doing it this season. So it is what it is, Graham.
Yeah, I mean, my view is any ranking without, you know, Harvard, Stanford, Wharton,
yeah.
I think MIT, Columbia, what was it, Berkeley, UCLA, all those schools were out of this ranking, so a little challenging. But yeah, again, the FT is a respected global ranking. It's admirable that they try to put together U.S. and non-U.S. programs. I agree with you, it's fraught with peril. But in any event, it's always fun to look at that stuff in the context of other things as well. But yeah, so that was the rankings. The last thing I'll say before we get into our candidates for this week is that we have that event coming up on March 3rd at noon Eastern, and we've got Wharton, Berkeley, Yale, MIT, and Carnegie Mellon coming on to do a webinar where we're going to talk about deferred enrollment programs. So this is for your, you know, young friends or our younger listeners who are still in college, maybe junior year, senior year, and thinking about applying to get into business school while they're still in college and then go off and work for a couple of years before starting an MBA program. So stay tuned for that. You can sign up on the website and probably should do so sooner rather than later if you're interested. Alex, other than that, I think we should just move on here, as you say, because we're, you know, got to get through some candidates and I'm watching the clock a little bit.
Yeah.
All right. So this is Wiretap's candidate number one. This is an ApplyWire entry that we received, and the person has 11 schools on the target list. Babson, Columbia, Cornell, Emory, Georgetown, Harvard, Kellogg, Stanford, Booth, Wharton, and Yale. And they're not starting business school until the fall of 22, so they got a little bit of time. They're going to be applying next season, basically. They've been working in consulting, and they want to get into nonprofit, social impact type work. GRE score is 327. The GPA is a 3.13. They've been working for 4 years. They are in London, and the candidate is actually of Ghanaian and British descent. They worked in a family business in Africa for about 18 months after university and then moved to London, where they currently work in consulting. They've done a ton of volunteer work in Africa, and they want to continue to do so, ideally like at a professional level, by transitioning over to the nonprofit side post-MBA. They mentioned that the low GPA was due to the loss of a sibling at the beginning of college, and they hope to explain that in their optional essay. But Alex, what do you make of this list of schools and this candidate's level of, you know, like how competitive are they? Given, you know, the sort of low GPA, high GRE, what do you make of this candidate?
Yeah, I mean, this candidate is really super interesting, quite frankly. GRE is very decent, right? 327, so that's very good. GPA is not decent. But clearly, you lose a sibling during your undergraduate studies, that's going to be pretty catastrophic.
Sure.
In terms of, you know, those issues. So you know, the ADCOM will have some sympathy for that, for sure. But I really absolutely encourage this person to go do some of that additional coursework they've talked about potentially doing, because that does two things. One is it helps reassure the ADCOM that, again, they will thrive in the curriculum. It's not good enough to show that you can survive a curriculum. You've got to show that you can thrive so that you can then fully engage in everything else that the MBA program is going to offer you. So go ahead and take some of that additional coursework. You combine that with a 327 GRE, then you're going to check that box. So I think that's an absolute must for this candidate to do. I love the potential on the professional side and the volunteer extracurricular side, as well as the impact side in terms of this person's goals. So this person has the wherewithal and the opportunity to be a big impact person in the long run as an alum. And again, that's what top schools look for. So quite frankly, Graham, this person, as described by one of our new three-star commenters, I don't know if that's the right way to say it, but the $90 for 90 like type people, as they expressed, if you don't apply to Harvard, Stanford, and Wharton, do all the right things, i.e. take some additional coursework, you know, dot your I's, cross your T's, because they're applying next season, do all that, shoot for the stars. If you don't make it, at least you know you tried. But whilst you're shooting for the stars, add in a couple of other M7, maybe one or two top 16. But this person has to land somewhere quite well, I think, Graham, if they do the right things, because they're applying next season, so they have some time to plan.
Yeah, this is, and you know, the advice that was given on this post was really strong across the board. I mean, I know you chimed in, but so did some others. And I think, I just feel like, as you said, if they could take MBA Math or HBX Core or some kind of pre-MBA coursework to demonstrate that academic aptitude and a commitment to kind of going off and getting the degree, that would go a long way. I think their background is, you know, pretty fascinating and will carry them. And the only other thing I would say is I don't like having 11 schools on any target list. It's just too big of a list. And they mentioned, yeah, oh, I'm going to split them between round one and two, but I still think it's too many. And so they should probably target, you know, 3 to 5 schools maybe for round one and keep it at the top end, as some of the comments suggest, and then see where the chips fall. And if it doesn't work out, they can have a fallback plan and get a couple in for round two. But I really don't think this person is going to need to apply to that many schools at all. They can just start at the top and work their way back in round two. So yeah, really interesting profile. And I wish them the best of luck. And I think, as you said, they could do big things in Africa after business school. The only thing I did wonder about is, like, what's the kind of, what's the immediate short-term goal? Like, have they really given that some clear thought in terms of what's the job and, you know, I mean, pretty practically speaking, how are they going to pay off their debt and all that stuff? So do they have, is there like a short-term plan to then get to the big picture of, you know, kind of doing nonprofit social impact work in Africa? So they should probably really think that through. But again, really good candidacy with just one blemish, which is the GPA issue that they should be able to overcome with a little luck.
Yeah, yeah. And again, some of our feedback is sort of based on the impact that they've had thus far in consulting, in their volunteer and nonprofit work. So they say they've done some good things. So making sure that they're delivering on that. Absolutely.
Yeah, agreed. All right, well, let's move on. We're going to talk about another ApplyWire entry. So this is Wiretap's candidate number 2. This candidate is applying to 4 schools, and you know, the intake year that they listed is 2023. So this person's not looking to start business school for quite some time, and that's because they are a deferred admission candidate. So this person's currently in college, and they're applying, and they're, you know, hoping to join one of these 2+2 type, you know, programs where you get in early, work for a while, and then join. And the schools that they have on the list are Berkeley, Columbia, Harvard 2+2, and Stanford. And this person has been studying chemical engineering. They want to get into consulting or technology after business school. And they listed Accenture, McKinsey, they also had Tesla on the list. And the GRE score that this candidate has is a 318, GPA 3.69. They indicate they have 1 year of work experience. I presume that's kind of maybe a combination of maybe summers, or I'm not sure how they're arriving at that. But in any event, they indicate, I'm mostly applying for deferred admission programs currently college senior with two internships, including Goldman Sachs. So, Alex, do you want to talk a little bit about, I mean, because this is a different type of approach when you're applying to these deferred admissions. So what do you make of this candidate and what do they need to do to get into a program at this early stage of their career?
Yeah. And frankly, I selected this entry because obviously we have the early admission or deferred admission event that we're rolling out in March. So this is a sort of typical candidate that may be looking at these types of programs. Mm-hmm. So, you know, this person has a 3.69 GPA in chemical engineering. We talked about this before we came on air, Graham. I mean, chemical engineering has got to be one of the hardest curricula that you're going to navigate through undergrad. So a 3.69 GPA in chemical engineering, in combination with, they obviously went through some kind of reasonably rigorous selection process to get an internship at Goldman Sachs. I don't think Goldman Sachs is free and easy with who they recruit for their internship program. So that aspect, to me, Graham, augurs pretty well for this candidate.
Yeah. I mean, except, well, chemical engineering, I mean, I kind of feel like you're suggesting that my art history major may not have been as challenging, but I...
I am suggesting that, Greg.
Yeah. Yes. I had a minor in going to rock shows and playing music and stuff, so... But okay, so chemical engineering, I agree with you. That's a tough major. And so that GPA of 3.69, it almost gets like a boost when you look at it. So yeah, I agree with you there.
So, that said... there are a few other things that you've got to figure. So if you're applying to these deferred admissions programs, the admissions committee has less sort of data points to be able to look at in terms of doing an overall evaluation. They don't have that 4 or 5 years of professional experience to interpret, as well as additional volunteer extracurricular activities they might have done during that 4 or 5 year experience. So because the ADCOM doesn't have those additional data points, then the data points that they do have are going to become more important. Where am I going with this, Graham, is this GRE score stands out, not in a good way in this case. Mm-hmm. So we talk about this person has a 3.69 GPA in chemical engineering, presumably from a decent school or whatever. So the 3.18 isn't going to be helpful at all, Graham.
Yeah, it's the weak spot for me because, as you correctly point out, whenever I've talked to admissions directors who oversee these deferred admissions programs, they always talk about how, you know, like you said, you have limited data to go on. And so the academics is under the magnifying glass, and that includes test scores and GPA and major and even caliber of undergraduate institution. One thing that we also don't have a clear line on here is to what extent this person's been active in their college community. You know, right. We have a sense that they've maybe had some good internships and have worked hard. You know, you don't, as you said, a Goldman Sachs internship doesn't drop out of the sky, right? So, but I think it will be important for them to showcase leadership and other activities on campus. But even so, that GRE score is low. I mean, it's low for the regular applicant pool. And when you look at the deferred candidates that get in, they typically have above average type scores compared to the general pool. So I would encourage a retake here if there's time. I think a lot of these programs on their list don't have deadlines until April. So there might be, you know, some time to address this score and try to boost it. What would you do if they couldn't get the score up? Would you still have them go for it? Or would you say, oh no, just go work and apply to regular MBA programs, you know, after you've worked for a while?
Well, look at it on the harm side. There's no harm in applying deferred admissions. If you don't get in, you come back as a reapplicant in 2 or 3 years' time.
Right.
And there's no stigma attached to the fact that you've already you're now reapplying. And data might even suggest the opposite. You know, typically the admit rates for reapplicants can be higher than first time candidates. So the only harm is the effort put in. On the part of the candidate, the cost and so on and so forth. So you know, at the end of the day, did this person prep hard for the GRE, and is this truly a reflective score of their ability for standardized testing? And if that's the case, then fine, put your package together, see where the chips land? Or did they decide, well, you know what, I take this GRE because a lot of my classmates are taking the GRE and maybe, you know, they're doing different masters or whatever, but now maybe I'll look at this deferred program because I'm interested in the MBA. But if they didn't put the effort into getting their very best GRE score, then they must retake the GRE. Put in that effort. The schools they have listed, Graham, I mean, Haas, Columbia, Harvard and Stanford. I mean, it's no joke when you're going in front of those admissions committees. So absolutely make sure that this GRE score is the very best score after significant effort in preparation. And then the other things that we don't really know about in terms of this candidate is their sort of plans post college to MBA and then post MBA. So those are things that they really want to have thought through well as a deferred admissions candidate. So it's not, you know, you're applying to the MBA and deferred admissions and you're looking at sort of presenting the best of yourself. You've also got to show that you're very thoughtful in your planning going forward and you've developed a good solid plan.
Yeah, agree. And, you know, just so our listeners know, you know, the average GRE score at like HBS's 2+2 program is a 326 or so, right? So, you know, this candidate's pretty well below that. So anyway, something to work on. I agree with you. No harm in applying. MBA, I love MBA admissions because there is really no stigma attached to reapplying to business school, unlike some other domains where, you know, once you don't get in, it's sort of like, don't bother coming back. And I agree. This person needs to develop their storyline. What does chemical engineering have to do with gold? And Sachs. Like I haven't seen what the thread is that's connecting, you know, this path that they're carving out. So they need to work on all that. Best of luck to them. Very cool to get a candidate that we could talk about who's deferred admission though, because it is an unusual piece of the kind of MBA admissions universe. Let's move on though. We have one more candidate that we wanted to cover today, and this is a DecisionWire entry. And so let's talk about Wiretap's candidate number 3. So this candidate is undecided, and they've been, they applied to Chicago, Harvard, MIT, and Stanford. So far, they've been admitted to Chicago, where they have been offered a $130,000 scholarship, and they've also been admitted to MIT Sloan. Those were both round one applications, and with MIT, they were offered $80,000 in scholarship. They're going to be starting school next fall, and they want to work in tech after business school. And their numbers, FEMAT score was a 670, GPA a 3.9. So I got to say, that's a, you know, really terrific results given, you know, test scores, you know, below average or whatever. GPA is off the charts high, right? So it happens, right? People can get in with, it's not all numbers, right? We got to remind people of that. The other thing I wanted to mention is that this candidate has an interview invitation for Harvard in round two. So they're, you know, that's in play as well. And they indicate that they need to decide between MIT and Chicago. Sounds like they got to put a deposit down somewhere. And they mentioned that they prefer MIT, but that Booth obviously gave them more money. And so they're wondering, like, can they be justified in going off to MIT, even though it would cost them about $58,000 more? And they say, are they crazy to do that? I think we're 2 weeks in a row, Alex, we're talking about whether or not a candidate is crazy for turning down one school for the other. But what do you make of this? So where does one go for tech, MIT or Booth, given the money that's on the table?
Yeah, I mean, quite frankly, whether they went to MIT or Booth, they're probably going to be set on a very good path going forward. Obviously, MIT Sloan, its ecosystem for tech is probably going to be a little bit more advantageous and so forth. And frankly, if that's where this person wants to go in terms of their current options, I would encourage them to do it. Obviously, 58 grand is a lot of money, but that's all relative to your own personal situation. For one person, 58 grand is, you know, absolutely super significant and will make a huge impact on their opportunities. For another person, you know, that's had a lucrative career to date, has been able to put away some savings or has other sources of funds, 58 grand might not be as significant, right? So it's going to depend on the person's sort of own personal circumstances, but they seem to really want to go to Sloan. So I say, if you want to go to Sloan, just go to Sloan and don't look back if you can make it happen financially. And obviously, they've got an interview invite at HBS round two. So this person is a pretty, pretty cool rock star, I think. You know, obviously 3.9 GPA, that's very, very good. But that 670 GMAT, like you said, Graham, is a very, it just goes to show that that test score is not, you know, it's a piece of the puzzle, and that's all it is, in terms of how the admissions committee is going to look at all this stuff. I'm very fond of the 670 myself, Graham, because quite frankly, about 100 years ago, that's the score I got. But and at that time, it put you into Mensa. I looked it up. But nowadays, yeah. it doesn't quite have the same effect.
Right.
But anyway, I reckon... Drop your deposit at Sloan, because that's frankly where you want to be if you can make it happen. Double down on that Harvard interview invite, you know, in terms of prep and so on and so forth. Maybe you're going to be debating whether you should go to Harvard and ultimately giving up a deposit you've already paid at another school, which is, again, an issue that candidates after the next round are going to have to start dealing with.
Yeah, I mean, good advice. I would just say that, you know, when this person started the process, they were probably prepared to spend quite a bit of money to go to business school. And so just because Booth has come up with more scholarship dollars doesn't mean that, you know, if they were planning on spending money to go to business school and they really want to go to MIT, I wouldn't just let the dollars drive this decision alone. They actually have a pretty generous scholarship from MIT. And, you know, I also wondered whether they'd, you know, written to MIT and said, this is where I want to be. But I have this other offer, because they are peer schools, and it's possible that maybe MIT would move the meter a little bit. Obviously, they'll have another debate if they end up with, you know, an offer at HBS and trying to decide between HBS and one of these schools, given the money, and, you know, hard to say what HBS will do financial aid-wise, because it's all need-based. But yeah, very interesting candidate, and obviously hats off to them. They, you know, secured these two offers so far, and an interview at Harvard, and with some dollars on the two that they were admitted to. So yeah, but I agree with you. I really think if they fit at MIT and that's where they want to be, that's where they should go. Alex, I think we've done it. We made it through our candidates for the week. Thanks for picking them out. And for all the discussion we had, love getting those emails with people asking us questions. We'll do more of that in the future. And I think we're going to have a special guest coming up. I can't say who yet, Alex, because I don't want to ruin it, but we may have a special guest joining us for an episode of Wiretaps in a week or two. So we'll keep everyone posted. But thanks for doing this as always, Alex. And I guess I'll see you in 1 week's time.
Very good. Thank you very much, Greg. Stay safe, everybody. Good luck.